I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right. Good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WIAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, 2 hours a day, 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there. Today, we've got a guest in the studio with us. I have brought on. We're going to talk a little bit today about the what's going on in the world of crypto in particular with somebody who kind of who understands it better than me. This may turn into a bit of a debate. We don't really know. I'm curious to get. So we're going to have Stephen Utroska on. Who's been on before and has subbed for me some, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's been going on with FTX, because not everybody is a crypto investor, but digital currencies are probably one of the biggest things that are going on right now. I've got clips. They've got plans for us. They are moving us this way. There were several kind of globalist meetings, a couple of them. I know one of them was the G20 meeting. I've got clips from that. And there was another... another meeting going on almost simultaneously. I don't know how, I guess with private jets, you can get from meeting to meeting very quickly to talk about climate change. But the central bank digital currencies are definitely on the horizon. Well, theoretically, this would be a competitor to Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. And then we've got the FTX collapse. So I want to talk about all of those things today. So, Stephen, appreciate you joining me today. You'll help walk us through this. We might have to do some explanation probably. Anytime we talk about crypto, I think there's a lot of people who still don't fully understand exactly what it is.
Yep. Always a pleasure to be on, Mike. I enjoyed coming on your show. Enjoy hosting your show when I can.
Yeah.
But crypto is certainly a interesting topic that I've touched on a few times on your show with you. And then when I filled in, I've tried to fill some people in about what's going on in the crypto world. But it's something that a lot of people don't understand.
Yeah.
It's complicated. I don't even understand all the, the blockchain technology, and I couldn't tell you how to do that. If you couldn't sit me down and have me coding, I have no clue how to do all that. But I do understand at least the industry, the market side of the crypto.
Yeah. Well, that's what we'll talk about today, because I think that, we have gone from cash to cards to digital and now online payments. I mean, money has moved faster and more conveniently constantly, and I think we're a slave to that convenience. So anyway, we're going to get into it today. A couple of quotes of the day today. I lined them up along with this. There's always a theme to the show. This is Aldous Huxley. I don't know if this is a quote from him or if this was in Brave New World, but Aldous Huxley said, "People will come to love their oppression, to adore the technologies that undo their capacities to think." I think he foresaw the phone. I think he foresaw the cell phone. There's another one, Robert Arrow, A-R-O. He's with the Mises Institute. He wrote a great piece last week talking about this rollout of central bank digital currencies. He said, "A cashless society would be the nail in the coffin for liberty and freedom, offering centralization the likes of which Marx could only dream." And that's his thoughts on the cashless society. And I share that with him. I think it's to be opposed with every fiber of our being for them not to allow us ways to interact with each other outside of some government-controlled currency anyway.
Yep. So this is what I'll say, and I've said this before on the air, is there is a huge difference between centralized, government-run digital currency and decentralized cryptocurrency.
Right.
So there is a big difference.
Yep.
And a lot of people don't understand the difference, and so they just lump them all together and say, hey, we can't have a cashless society. If we have a cashless society, the government's going to know exactly what you're doing and how you're doing it, and they're going to follow everything you do. But a decentralized cryptocurrency, and of course Bitcoin being the leader in that is completely decentralized, there is – you know, still, at least as of now, and you and I were talking before the, you know, before the show, at least for now, there is some anonymity in, you know, using blockchain technology to transfer, you know, coins like Bitcoin back and forth. You're just a, you know, a number on a blockchain that's not tied to anybody. It has no identifying information on it to say it's you doing it. It's just some number showing that there's been trades or, you know, a number amount going back and forth. Now, it's completely open. It's transparent. I can go on there and see every trade that's ever been made on crypto or on
where a coin
Bitcoin.
Has moved.
Right, where coins have moved. I can go on there and watch every one of them, but I have no clue who they are. It's just numbers.
Right.
You know, so it would take, you know, basically the government forcing you to tell them what your blockchain number is for them to be able to track that and follow it.
Well, I think that, you know, I think the point of when I hear cashless society, I still, even if, you know, even if we have access to a bunch of different things, including Bitcoin and a central bank digital currency and bank accounts with everything else, if we came to a situation where you could not legitimately hold something that you could trade for goods and services, I think that'd be a disaster.
Yeah.
Particularly when you're so reliant on, you know, I'm not a grid's about to go down guy. Could happen, but the idea of being tied to everything electronically, that there are ways that gets interrupted. There are hackers to sites. I mean, I feel good knowing that I have cash ready now. And I've told my son, make sure you've got cash right now. That if they come out and pretty much say that legal tender is no good anymore, we're recalling it, and here's your central bank digital currency wallet. That's where, you know, you turn your dollars into the bank. And we put those dollars into a, you know,
So it's funny, you know, I know we'll get into this more, but how they can regulate crypto and what they'll try to do for that. And if they outlaw it, you know, what will that do? Well, it's the same way with cash right now. I mean, we could, you know, the U.S. dollar is not really currency. It's really a, you know, promissory note
right.
to say we may give you this. So just like you just said, they could come out tomorrow and say, hey, cash is all gone. We're not accepting it anymore. Turn it in. We'll give you a number on a screen for our digital currency now.
Right.
Otherwise, we're outlawing it. You can't use it. You can't do anything with it. It's worthless. So then 99.9% of, you know, all grocery stores and convenience stores or anybody else is going to quit taking cash, which a lot of them don't now anyway, especially if it's over $10,000. A lot of places won't take your cash because then it, you know, they have to report it to IRS and things like that. So at some point, if the government wants to cut off the cash flow, they can, and the value of it's going to drop to almost nothing because if nobody's using it, what's it worth? So you're going to have to turn in for their digital currency. So when you talk about cash, wanting a cashed society, that cash that you're supporting is a centralized currency, and it's not even real money.
Yeah.
It's just a promissory note. And so I'm with you. I absolutely 100% believe in holding something tangible in your hand, solid, that you can trade with. But the U.S. dollar is not that.
Yeah,
I
agree.
What it should be. Gold, silver, things like that. That have, you know, those two things, you know, have stood the test of time.
5,000 years.
You know.
Yeah. Well, so, I think that, you know. And I toyed with this as a business and really kind of fell flat on my face. I think people weren't ready for it. But local currencies, I think, are going to play a part going forward. If we have a severe financial crisis, I mean, I think local communities can become very and actually I'm very well knowledgeable in this because I started a business doing this. There was just really no appetite for it. I couldn't really – long story, but
You tried to start your own central bank? Is that what you
– Essentially, yeah. yeah, absolutely. A central Mississippi or a Mississippi. I'll tell you more about it off air. I still would love to do it. The idea fascinated me. But you can have a fully functioning local community operate purely on and it's based on, you know, trading of goods and services. There's a real value behind every dollar in the local currency because it's all earned somehow. It has a value in what it buys and – for the effort the business put together. Still opaque talk about it. It's not a good elevator speech. People, you know, kind of turn their heads like a puppy at you. Huh, what?
You want to talk about governments wanting to shut something down.
You're right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, so actually this has been tried in the U.S. before. I don't know if you remember the Confederate States. They actually had their own currency too. And when the Union came down and crushed them, you know, and won the war, Confederate currency became worthless.
Yeah.
You know, and there was people who had, you know, basically transferred their U.S. dollars into Confederate dollars, millions, you know, millions worth, because they were supporting the Confederacy. And then all of a sudden, when the Union won, they had worthless pieces of paper sitting around. So that's why it would be very difficult for, you know, someone to try to buy into a local currency, knowing that if I trade U.S. dollars for your local currency, and then the federal government comes down and squashes it.
Well, it's actually the way it's done, it's essentially centralized, and that feels like a bad term in the context of what we're talking about.
I think it is a bad term.
But it's barter. It is a common currency using barter, and the concept is essentially that, you know, you have this stuff. I go out and perform a service for somebody. They give me 100 of those units. Well, I use those 100 units that I've earned, and I can go get landscaping services. The landscaper takes those units, and he can go hire a plumber that's right on this network. And so it's just formalized barter. You know, barter is I do something for you, you do something for me. We trade sure a service. With this, it gives a currency to that so that the value of what you've done, you don't have to do one-on-one barter. You have a whole community where there's a unit of exchange that can be used with other people, so sure you can barter around a community. It's really very fascinating and very sustainable. It's interesting, though, as I looked at it, you can do the same thing. If you get a bad actor running one of these, they can inflate away the value of that as well.
Yeah.
You have to really monitor it to make it sound. So it's interesting. We won't get into big, complex monetary theory here. But anyway, yeah, so we got Stephen Utrosk on here. We're going to talk a little bit about crypto, the future of it. I've got some clips from the globalists from just this past week of what it looks like they're planning. And then we've got some other stuff to get into. And when we come back, I wanted to talk to you real quick. I lost a listener. And I didn't even argue with him. I didn't argue with him. I think he brought up some salient points about the show, but I wanted to talk about it a little bit and kind of explain what, you know, inside the head of Mike Madison, because yeah, it's one of those things I can get kind of testy on air.
Yeah.
I can get pretty angry.
You know, last time I filled in for you, I lost you a listener too.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember, but
well, maybe I got him back, and then I jettisoned another one. So it's a battle at the edges. All right, we're talking to Stephen Utrosk here with us. This is the Mike Madison Show here in the Mac Hike of Flowood Studios. We'll be right back.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
All right, so this past week I got a message from a listener, and I lost a listener. It's to my strident style, my anger on air. Now,
so there's only three of us left now, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I wouldn't be talking about it if it wasn't such a giant piece of the audience. It's interesting because I didn't argue with this guy. I said, you know, I don't blame you. You know, and the funny thing is anybody who knows me in my personal life, I'm all about a sense of humor. I mean, if anybody knows me in real life, that's if anybody asks one characteristic of me, that would be it. This stuff doesn't ruin my life. But, you know, I get in here, I was accused of bitterness. And the funny thing is, he actually said I should get therapy. So, you know, you've crossed some kind of a Rubicon when someone's suggesting you seek professional help.
Yes.
So I work out after the show and I go about. I'm actually a very happy-go-lucky guy. You know, I have other work out there. And I talked to some people at work not long ago. I said, have y'all ever seen me in a bad mood? They go, you know, that's weird. No, we've never seen you in a bad mood. So anyway, I digress a little bit. But anger and bitterness on the show. You know, I have this weird thing about me that I really have a hard time watching people get abused. If you can imagine the anger that wells up in somebody, if you see or if you even hear a story of really bad child abuse, you know, anybody, particularly a parent, but really anybody, we all have sympathy for some children. You kind of get that gut reaction of just, how could a grown-up do that to an innocent child? It just stokes something in you.
Like the outrage when there was that video of the lady with the scream mask or whatever scaring all the kids.
Right.
There was a national outrage over that. Everybody was so, you know, irate over how could you possibly do that to children? Yeah,
right.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Well, if not only hearing of an incidence of child abuse that can get anger going in you, ongoing child abuse that maybe you're witnessing and you know it's going on. And that's really what I feel. I believe we have got a political class, a structure set up in this country that is inflicting ongoing abuse. We are literally living in a time. And this is what I'm going to say for all the strident anger that comes across in this show sometimes. We're living in a time where tens of that. This is no exaggeration in 2022. Tens of thousands of people were forced to take a shot that either killed or maimed them. They were forced to do this to keep a job. We have in the past 20 years witnessed from afar. Most people don't pay attention to it. And I do. The deaths of millions of people around the world, innocent people, moms and dads, sons and daughters, have died in these wars for no reason. We have a system set up here that strips Americans of their wealth. We are now 50 years into declining real wages for the bottom 90% of people. People who get escape velocity in the top 10%, I'm mad at them, but it is the 0.01% that have gotten all of the gains of really, particularly the last 14 years, but about the last 50 years. And I understand the struggle that puts on people and the inflation and what's stripping. We have seen the greatest wealth transfer in the history of mankind over the last 14 years within a short period of time. So I look at these things. These are ongoing abuses of people. And when I get in here and start talking about these things, it is hard for me not to get extremely angry. Now, there are two different kinds of conservative talk radio, I believe. There's one which is kind of it's the Rush Limbaugh, the Dana Lash, very entertaining programs with a lot of great points and a lot of things I would agree with, but they never look at those kinds of things. You know, you're not going to hear a national radio show host talk about the death count on VAERS. You'll hear them talk about, well, our children, look at this, our test scores are a little worse. But they won't talk about the absolute mental and physical abuse of children over the last couple of years. And so they kind of gloss over a lot of these issues. They'll talk about taxes, but they talk about them in the context of, well, if you elect our guys, they're going to save you 3% a year in taxes. And I think, you know, how much wealth, how much prosperity could be in this country if there were no taxes? I mean, the confiscatory nature of our tax structure to feed a government that most people don't agree with, to do things we don't want or don't need, it is just stripping Americans of wealth. And we're, as I say, we're 50 years into a declining standard of living. We might have more gadgets, but there's more stress on people. We went from one wage earner in a house. Now the mom has to work. And they still can't make ends meet. We're at record levels of consumer debt, $16 trillion now, like revolving credit debt. And so when I look at these things, I am what I believe I'm seeing. And again, the rest of my day, I go along. I'm really a pretty happy, lucky guy. But when I come in here and I start reporting on this stuff, we are witnessing the ongoing abuse of people, not only in the United States, but around the world. You've got people in Germany right now. They're cutting down forests for trees. I mean, cutting down forests for firewood. They're about to plunge them into the dark ages in Germany based on this ridiculousness in Ukraine. The poor Ukrainian people, outside of the Nazis. I don't support the Nazis. The Nazis get what's coming to them. But, you know, the vast majority of people in Ukraine, I know that the West provoked that war. I'm not justifying Vladimir Putin going in there. But the West knew what it was doing. It's been trying to alienate, encircle, be provocative towards Russia. And this is a logical consequence of exactly what the West has done. And Ukrainian people, if we are real quiet right now, you can probably hear some of them dying right now, today. These are innocent people who just want to live their lives. They don't have a dog in that hunt. But these people at the top are... So I am witnessing an ongoing abuse of people. It is very difficult for me to accept that and take that in stride. And that makes me weird.
Yep.
And I don't get that. I don't know why there's no outrage. Now, the other side, so there's the conservative talk show host that really, they talk about the political theater. They make all the great points they can about the left. God knows, there's plenty of them to make. But then there's the other talk show host who will talk about the things that I'm talking about, but they blame them all on one side.
Yep.
They couch it all in political terms where, and they give you this, what my show is maybe missing, and it shouldn't be, because the power to me is with people. If we were all come together and have our differences, but stop what's going on now. The other talk show hosts will talk about all these things, but just say, if you give our side more power, it's all going to end. Now, we're easily 70 years, I would say, in modern political history of knowing that that's not going to happen. They've never ridden to the rescue. I'm telling you, we are 50 years into declining real wages for the vast majority of Americans to reach us to a point where 65% of Americans don't have $400 saved for an emergency. We've elected every party, every combination. We've done that all. So the other hosts that talk about these things, they give what I believe to be false hope. Is it better to just play the party game, give everybody the hope that if you just get align yourself with this side, then everything's going to be, and both sides do this now. I'm not just really talking about the right. But to me, we need some pretty drastic change. And I'll be honest with you, I'm fed up.
Yep.
I have become contemptuous of the American voter that continues to these exact same patterns. And I'm opposed to the Trump presidency. I'm opposed to Kevin McCarthy going back in as Speaker of the House. I mean, I'm opposed to a lot of these things. I am getting to where part of my style problem is probably that I am really getting some contempt for people doing the same things. So if I hear Bidenflation one more time, which gives the true cause of inflation a complete pass, all the people responsible for destroying the lives of hundreds of millions of Americans right now, or making their lives more difficult, I won't say destroying, you give them a pass every time a conservative says Bidenflation, because they ignore exactly what led up to this that implicates both parties.
The $6 trillion that Trump passed?
Yes.
And the Congress thereof, right, during that tenure?
Absolutely. Yeah. They ignore all of those things. And I'm getting contemptuous of that. I've kind of lost my patience. You can probably hear it in my voice right now.
Yeah.
I know I may need some therapy. But that is really at the crux of this show. The anger is, and I said it the other day, I can't remember what it was. I feel like that scene in a movie where somebody is just losing their mind out of fear, in a horror movie or something. And the person that loves them, the friend, the person that's on their side, grabs them by the scruff of their neck and slaps them really hard. It's not a violent slap out of anger. It is a return to your senses. We've got work to do to get ourselves out of this situation.
Yep.
That's, to me, kind of what this show tries to be. I don't think I'm effective at it. I mean, I will readily admit that. But I think we have got to break out of this idea of a political savior and realize that this I don't know if it's nullification. I don't know if it's a national divorce. We need radically different ideas. We are pumping out in this country, and particularly here in central Mississippi, tens of thousands of children, 12 years through school, given absolutely no skills to succeed in a professional world, and focusing entirely on the fact that when they get older, they get stuck on welfare or they commit crimes. I mean, all the inevitable consequences of a horrific education system, and we've done nothing about it for 50 years.
Yep.
And so it is very difficult for me to take those things in stride. And now some of the big talk show hosts are making millions of dollars a year. Maybe that's my problem.
You're just not populous enough.
I'm probably not above the fray enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'm in the soup. The abuse is heaped upon me, too. I have not reached escape velocity that Hugh Hewitt has, that Dana Lash has, that Rush Limbaugh had. I'm not there. I can't rise above this. I'm in the soup with everybody else. And I'm sick of the people around me facilitating the abuse of the American people, thinking that the letter behind somebody's name is what's going to make the difference.
Yep. All right, so you just went on a long rant, so I got a couple of points. I'm going to try to keep track of it all. So, you know, I mostly do state politics. I'm more involved with the state than federal, but it's the same thing on the state side.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, what is it when you make excuses for your abuse or Munchausen syndrome?
Yeah, exactly.
Stockholm
syndrome.
Stockholm, thank you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we see that even on the state level. So I do a lot of candidate kind of interviews, people who are looking to run for office in Mississippi as a state candidate. And so I try to vet a lot of them to see if they're worth supporting, to try to get other groups to support them. And we literally had a guy that we were looking at. He reached out to me, wanted to talk with me. I usually have him fill out a questionnaire, had this guy fill out a questionnaire. Now, he knows that I'm very conservative, liberty-minded guy. And so you would think he would know what kind of positions I hold.
Right.
And so when he fills out a questionnaire that I give most candidates I talk to, if I'm going to help them in their candidacy, it has questions that are very conservative leaning. I mean, you could read through it. If you're smart enough, you can read through what I'm trying to find out, and you could lie to me about it. And that, you know, I'd rather you lie to me almost than be idiotic and just,
yeah,
you know,
at least get the understanding. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, several of the questions are about taxation. Literally had a guy write on there, and this guy's wanting to run as a Republican, you know, as a conservative, and have conservative organizations help back him or endorse him. He writes on there that taxes aren't that bad right now. If we needed a little more taxes taken out of our paycheck, if it would make things better, he would be okay supporting that.
Holy cow.
We're talking about right now, you have, you know, if you pay income tax, federal and state, you know, plus Social Security, Medicaid, you know, everything all combined, you pay almost 50% of your paycheck now.
Right.
And then after that, you're paying sales tax, property tax, car tax, everything else. I mean, you're talking about well over 50% of your income. You're paying to the government's taking 50% of your income right now under threat of violence. They're taking your 50% of what you make now. And for us to look at it and say, well, you know, if they tax us a little bit more, it's going to be okay. They haven't been able to do what they say they're going to do with the first 50%, but if we give them just a little bit more, we're okay.
We're always 10% away.
That's what, I mean, that's, you know, Stockholm syndrome comes to my mind constantly when people are thinking, well, if they tax us a little bit more, we'll be able to turn this thing around. And, you know, Mississippi, I harp very hard on the Republicans in Mississippi. And I say this all the time, at least the Democrats in Mississippi, pretty much, honestly, they're principled. They come out and say, hey, we want to tax you more. We want to steal more money from you. We want to, you know, more welfare. We want more, you know, government control. We want bigger government. The Democrats aren't scared to say that here in Mississippi. And so I actually respect them that they come out, they're honest. The Republicans in Mississippi, we have a supermajority in both the House and the Senate. All eight of our statewide elected officials are Republicans. And very rarely can I trust, you know, outside of a handful of them, very rarely can I trust that the run-of-the-mill Republican in Mississippi, if I ask him, hey, do you support taxes? Do you, you know, support Medicaid expansion? Will they actually give me an honest answer?
Right.
I can't trust them.
Right.
They campaign. No Republican is campaigning in Mississippi, knocking on the door saying, hey, I want to be your next Republican senator or representative, and I'll support Medicaid expansion. I'll support more taxes. I'll support more government control. All of them are saying the exact opposite to that. But when they get down to Jackson, they start making votes. They're doing the complete opposite of what they campaigned on, and nobody knows or cares. They go back and vote for them again. Nobody follows what they're actually doing, and they just do it over and over and over, and nothing is changing.
Right. And it's serious stuff. You know, it feels to me at this point, the hour is getting late, I believe. And we're going to talk about this cryptocurrency and central bank digital currency, these kinds of things that I think are really potentially real freedom stripping. I mean, this could be really serious stuff. And so I don't know another way. I don't know why people aren't fired up about it. But, you know, I look at and I talk about this a lot. I don't want to go on. We got to take a break. I look at it's true death. I mean, we have got a government of death. But people say it's the Democratic Party is the party of death. Well, I mean, I'm not going to argue that point for sure, particularly now that they're the war party as well. But we've got a country where the government, regulations, taxation, foreign wars, they are inflicting literal death upon large, large groups of people. You know, we just had another shooting, the gay nightclub, whatever. It's tragic for the people who got shot. It'll be politicized on both sides of the aisle. It's very, very sad. That's done on a daily basis by governments around the world, and particularly our government. You know, and I'll finish with this, because this was one thing that really kind of tipped me over the edge the other day. Roger Wicker, the Republican from Mississippi, is proposing things like a no-fly zone over Ukraine.
Yeah.
These are real threats. If he got his way, he's all for the funding of Ukraine. He's all for every military belligerent thing we can do regarding Russia. And he's for even the more extreme no-fly zone over there. Should he get his way, that would most probably realistically lead to a World War III and a possible nuclear exchange. If nothing else, a very, very severe war. He shows up at a Republican Party grip and grin, and that's what he gets. Grips and grins. This is a man promulgating the idea of a World War III nuclear exchange that will kill potentially millions of people, displace maybe entire countries, destroy the lives of a large section of humanity, and Republicans pat him on the back and take selfies with him. I honestly do not have the internal mechanism in myself to somehow process that. And that is what we're dealing with. And to me, the lack of outrage about that kind of thing is more concerning to me than anybody else's outrage about it.
Yep.
So I don't know. Anyway, I'll assess my style going forward, but I make absolutely no guarantees.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, the quote. I've said this on the air before, but all we ever wanted was to be left alone, and for that, they'll hate us.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. All right, we're talking to Stephen Jastrowski here. We will be right back.
I need to feel your touch.
We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, here in the Mac Like a Flowwood Studios with Stephen Jastrowski. We're going to let's get into the crypto stuff. It's going to be kind of a deep dive. I want to take a look at what the globalists have plans and get your ideas. And we'll talk about FTX, too. That's a big story.
Yes.
It's got a ton of tentacles in all kinds of different ways besides just the failure of one exchange.
War in Ukraine, Democrat funding, all kinds of stuff.
Well, do you know that FTX actually funded the study that said ivermectin was no good?
Yeah. I didn't hear that one.
Yeah. They are the ones who, the big authoritative ivermectin's no good for anybody. We can't use ivermectin. FTX sponsored that study.
Yeah.
Which just opens up like a whole nother, like, what the hell is this thing involved in? So anyway, and I've got some of them almost kind of amusing clips on it as well. But I want to talk about one thing. You're plugged into House Freedom Caucus here, the House Freedom Caucus nationally. Marjorie Taylor Greene, a big star in the MAGA movement. She's a House Republican. I love some of the things Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's one of those people who, you know, she will call out the things that most Republicans don't dare speak about, you know, which is what her, Rand Paul, Thomas Massey, Chip Roy, these other people. I was surprised that she was supporting Kevin McCarthy for Speaker of the House. I had heard in an interview, and I think I played a clip, Matt Gaetz saying that there was no path to the speakership for Kevin McCarthy. But last week, it seemed like they were saying Marjorie Taylor Greene agreed to support him, and so now he is the shoe-in. But you're saying that not so fast?
Yeah, I don't think that's the case. So, you know, I can't speak on behalf of the U.S. House Freedom Caucus or what they're planning or doing. This, you know, all from my personal opinion. The House Freedom Caucus has, again, they don't publish the numbers, how many members they have, but they have somewhere around 40 members.
Why don't they tell?
For strategic reasons, because you don't know how many. Because let me tell you, whether you're in, you know, Mississippi or D.C., everybody's counting votes.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's counting whether you're going to have their vote or not on this. And so if no one really knows how many members they have exactly, if it's, you know, somewhere between 35 to 45 members that you have in your caucus, it's very hard for people to start counting votes.
Well, that's interesting. But they don't have like meetings. I mean, they're not on record anywhere.
They have meetings, but they're private meetings. They're outside of the Capitol. They don't meet in the Capitol. They're not public meetings. They private, you know, invitation only meetings.
So a little resistance movement in the dark. I like it.
That's it. Yeah. Well, actually, they first started meeting before they had an actual place to go, which is Conservative Partnership Institute now supports them, and that's where they meet. Before that, they literally started meeting in the basement of a Mexican restaurant in D.C.
Oh, I like that even more.
That was where they originally started their meeting. So even more cloaked in darkness. You had nobody knew where they were. They do it for strategic reasons why they don't publish it. But you can't, if you have 40 members of the Republican Party, so now the Republicans are only going to have the House by a handful of members. You know,
right.
They're only going to have, you know, what, like 225 at most, you know, out of that 218 they need for the majority. So you have to have every Republican, you know, basically on board. And so if the House Freedom Caucus with their 40 members comes out and says, no, we're not supporting this guy, It's not going to happen.
So, but what I had read, and I didn't understand it, and that's why I'm asking you. Do you understand these things? It sounded to me like if they don't do McCarthy and they lose the House Freedom Caucus or people that would vote against McCarthy, somehow they can come to some arrangement with the Democrats to pick somebody.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just scare tactics. They're just saying that to, you know, publicly fear people into saying, oh, maybe, you know, the public, to get the public in saying, oh, you know, maybe we should get McCarthy. He's not that bad. He'd be better than a Democrat pick. But this is the thing. As you know, theatric as it is in D.C., when have you ever known that the Democrats would cross over and support Republicans? Now, the opposite is true. Republicans cross over all the time to support Democrat bills and things like that. But it would be absolute career ending for Democrats to vote for a Republican.
Well, I heard Liz Cheney's name floated. I didn't know that Speaker of the House does not have to be a House member.
Yeah, so you don't have to be an elected official.
Yeah.
It's completely – so, I mean, there was the same rumors that Trump – they could elect Trump as Speaker so he could be Speaker and then DeSantis could be –
I'm not a Trump fan. That would be interesting.
Yeah, it would be funny. they can do that. They don't have to be a member of Congress to actually elect them as a Speaker, but none of that's going to happen. I mean, they would never do that. The Republicans would not do that either. They're going to pick within their own ranks, and the Democrats would never, no matter how moderate the Republican is, the Democrats would never cross over and vote for a Republican.
Even though
it's just not going to happen.
It's a sealed fate. It's going to be a Republican because they control the House. Democrats wouldn't just hold their nose and go, where are we going to get somebody?
Not going
to
happen.
I mean, to be honest with you, I'm sure the Democrats love Kevin McCarthy. I mean, I don't know really what their problem would be. He's got a lot of rhetoric, but, I mean, he's an establishment guy, and Democrats love to work within the establishment to continue pushing things left and into bigger government and all these other things. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it just can't – I mean, it won't happen. It just won't happen. The Democrats won't ever, you know, come over the line and hold their nose and vote for Republican. They're all going to vote no against every Republican no matter what. So that means you pretty much have to have almost all Republicans support it, which they're going to do all that in conference, which is what the Republicans in D.C. call their caucus meetings. They'll come together. All the Republicans will come together. They'll pretty much fight it out among themselves and vote among themselves who they're going to support. And then as a Republican, if that's who the Republicans decide to support, when you come out on the floor, that's who you're going to vote for.
Yeah.
You know,
So like the House Freedom Caucus, by having a slimmer majority in the House, actually becomes more powerful.
Yes. Gives the House Freedom Caucus more power. And not saying that that's necessarily what, you know, some of us who support the caucus wanted, not that we wanted a slimmer majority
of
Republicans,
yeah,
but it actually does provide a better playing field for those of us who are actually conservative.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting. All right. Well, we'll see. When is this vote supposed to take place? Because I am curious. I think it says a lot about the Republican Party, who they make Speaker of the House.
Yeah. I don't know if there's anything saying they have to make the vote in, you know, any particular time except for, you know, when the new session starts, which,
But is Pelosi done now already, or is she resigned as of when it changes? I mean, obviously, the Congress is still Democrat, so she's still operating as Speaker of the House.
Yeah, they're in a lame duck session, meaning they're about to lose power, so they're going to try to ram through anything they can right now because they still own it. They still have it. But, you know, Pelosi has said she won't seek re-election the next time around.
Yeah.
And won't, even if the Democrats, you know, win in 2024 and take back over the House, she's not seeking re-election or the, you know, speakership.
Yeah, so the next 2 months feel dangerous.
It is very dangerous.
I mean, Ukraine in particular, this seems like there's just the money that they might spend in the next 2 months sounds just it seems horrific.
Horrid.
Yeah, this is really bad. All right, got to take a break. We'll be right back. All right, we've only got a couple minutes left. Talking to Stephen Utrosko, we've talked crypto over the years. We're going to take a look at the crypto, but more importantly, I know a lot of people are not necessarily crypto people. I can't turn this into a crypto show. an even slimmer audience out there than I might already have. But the FTX story has got a lot of steam. Want to talk about crypto, about FTX, and particularly I want to bring you these clips of the globalists and what they're talking about with these exchanges, because I think this is one of those things where it's almost kind of couched in the crypto world. I think it's actually one of the most important things, trends that the world's undergoing right now.
Yeah.
The control of money is so important. And it's kind of like, you know, we kind of been moved from things, oh, now we got Venmo, now we got this, everything's more convenient, blah, blah, blah. It's just kind of this switch to a central bank digital currency could be lights out for anybody who thinks they're going to be in resistance of any kind. I hear a lot of people talking about the Civil War. You want to talk about a way to take people off the battlefield of a Civil War? Completely shut them down and give them no alternatives to, you know, destroy them as financial humans. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit.
Well, and digital currency is so easy to carry. You just have to have, you know, basically the key to get into your crypto and then, you know, access to the internet to get to it. So it's very easy to carry a whole lot of money just in your mind, basically, and then you can get to a terminal where you can plug it in.
Yeah.
You know, they've never really come out that hard against gold and silver. Now they have, you know, they've made it illegal too.
Yeah, right.
But they know that it's very hard for you to carry a ton of money in gold and silver.
Yeah.
So they've never really come out hard against it. Crypto, easy to carry, easy to conceal. They can't take what's in your mind if you can come up, you know, remember the keys.
Elon Musk is developing the Neuralink, you know, the brain implant. Maybe that's what they're doing. They're be able to go in there and hack your accounts that way. So anyway, a pretty fascinating topic, and particularly in the FTX stuff. I've just got a great clip of an interview with that Sam Bankman-Fried before the implosion that's really funny. Talking to Stephen Nitroska. We'll be right back.
I see the shadows on my face. People have told me I don't look the same. Maybe I lost weight. I'm playing hooky with the best of the best.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, here in the Mac Hike of Flowood Studios with Stephen Nitroska today. We're going to talk about cryptocurrencies, about the FTX stuff, and about central bank digital currencies. Possibly the most important trend going on in the world right now. You want to talk about how to control a population? Herald them into nothing but a centralized digital currency they can turn on and turn off with very little effort. I did have one other quote of the day today I didn't get to. It was funny. There's a meme out there. It says, at this point, if I get abducted by aliens, it's no longer an abduction. It's a rescue mission. So,
I've seen the same one that it says, you know, if aliens come and say, take me to your leader, we're going to be pretty embarrassed about that.
The man turned 80. Is he already had his birthday? He's 80 years old. Oh, my gosh. Every time Biden goes to, like, I mean, there's a bunch of scumbag politicians running a lot of countries. I mean, you know, I'm no fan of Macron or any of these. The guy that's over the prime minister of England right now is horrible. I mean, he is just a huge globalist, and he's a conservative. Boris Johnson was a globalist, but this guy takes it to a whole nother slimy level. He and Trudeau making the call to Zelensky. I don't know if you saw that. We might play the clip today. But anyway, thinking of Joe Biden sitting in any of those rooms, they must just be thinking, oh, my God, what's happened in the United States?
Yep.
We should not fear these people at all. All right, I wanted to get into – okay, so – well, let me ask you this. So Sam Bankman-Fried, is it Fried or Fried? Fried.
I don't know.
Anyway, were you familiar with him going into this? I'd heard all the headlines about him buying up all these distressed. He was like kind of – I'd never seen him before, but I kind of got the vibe that he was seen in the crypto world as this savior of crypto, like kind of the thought leader there, and he's going out there and propping up all these exchanges and everything. He was quite the leader in the crypto.
Yeah. Yeah, and I really didn't know that much about him, you know, at least personally, or, you know, any of his personal life behind that. But FTX, for sure, was one of the global leaders, you know, which they kind of came up, you know, they're not
quick.
That old of a company.
No, 2 years.
And so they kind of came up out of nowhere, had huge, you know, I mean, it was very obvious they had huge amount of funding behind them to, you know, to get them going. So I just assumed that, you know, that whoever started it was probably some, you know, billionaire's kid who wanted to start it and, you know, had a ton of startup money and was doing it. And which turns out, I think that was our money that was, you know, funding them.
Ultimately. Well, did you hear, and I don't know, maybe the story's not true. At this point, I don't know what to believe. Did you hear how he got started, how he made his money? So what he did was he appears to be on the spectrum. We'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
He's almost so mentally feeble when I listened, and we're about to play some clips from him. It almost, and his parents are very, you know, they're very political leftist. And I don't know if this kid was manipulated into this stuff or if he is an evil genius on the, an evil autistic genius. I don't know.
I'll go with first, I think.
Yeah, his parents kind of used him as the cutout, but the way he supposedly made his money was that he saw an arbitrage opportunity that Bitcoin was trading for, say, in the United States, $10,000 a coin. In Japan, it was trading for $11,000. The first way I heard this story was that he had $200, and this feels a little more urban fairy tale to me. He had $200, so he bought Bitcoin here, somehow got the mechanism to sell it on a Japanese exchange, made 10%. Did this over and over again within the course of 2 months. He had made $20 million. You can imagine a compounding 10%, even on
sure.
$200.
Yeah,
the beauty of compounding there. Then I saw an interview with him yesterday as I was trying to find some of these clips where he mentioned something about, we took $10 million and played this arbitrage off. The genius of that idea, I mean, I don't know. Would that be, have you ever seen this or heard of this, these arbitrage opportunities where, you know, in dollar terms,
yeah.
different countries are trading at different things? I don't know, but that's...
Yeah, I've never seen that. I mean, you know, most of the markets are global anyways, except for certainly in the U.S., it's already regulated some. So a lot of the big, like FTX had FTX U.S.
Right.
Binance has
and
Binance
that was
US.
Regulated. But the FTX
right.
out of the Bahamas, where he was busted
right,
and it fell
yeah.
apart, was not. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so this is the thing. He came up pretty much out of nowhere, you know, had a huge, you know, whether he got the money from somewhere, which I assume most of the money he had started up was, you know, given to him.
Yeah.
I think, and I know you're going to play some things, and we're going to get into this, but just to preface this entire thing, this is my 30-second elevator speech of what I think this entire FTX debacle was about. I think, one, they needed a way that they could, you know, funnel and launder money quickly to do some things. I know we'll talk about what they use that money for. So I think that was one goal of FTX, was to start up a way that they being, you know, the Democrats, a lot of them,
yeah.
you know, and our even U.S. government, to launder some money, a way to do that. Two, I think from the very beginning, they expected that this would crash at some point.
Yeah.
And in doing so, a lot of the people who are against digital currencies or who aren't familiar with crypto, who are kind of leery about wanting to get in, all of a sudden they're going to point to this and say, see,
oh, yeah.
another reason why I told you you should have never been in. You know,
perfect
so it's a
false
regulation. Flag. Yep, they're going to say, oh, told you should have been regulated. Told you shouldn't have got into this. Just keep your money in cash. Don't get into that crypto. But as we've already mentioned on the first hour before we really got into it, the government hates competition.
Right.
And any kind of cryptocurrency is now a competition to their currency, their promissory notes of the U.S. dollar. And so this is a way for them to point at it and scare people from wanting
yep.
to get into crypto, because one of the largest exchanges now, you know, just fell. And, I mean, millions of people across the world just lost everything they had in these exchanges. Now, I'll preface it all this by saying you should never, ever keep your cryptocurrency on an exchange. Use an exchange to buy it, trade cash for it. Use an exchange to, you know, trade cryptos if you want. But as soon as those transactions happen, you should then take that cryptocurrency and put that on a wallet, either a digital wallet or a hard wallet or something else. And so in the crypto world,
so it's all
world,
by itself. It's almost like taking your money out of the bank
that's
and
right.
putting it in your safe
yes.
in your home.
100%. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly the you know, tangible form of what's digitally happening when you put it in a wallet. You have to, I talked about earlier, having keys. You have keys that are, you know, basically a string of words that create a key that you can get into your cryptocurrency. If you don't hold those keys, you don't hold the crypto.
Right.
And so when the cryptocurrency, the digital money, when it's on an exchange, all you hold is a password to get into your bank account. It's
right.
just like having money in a bank here.
Right.
If you have money in a U.S. bank, you don't hold that money. And if we go through another depression like they did in, you know, the 1920s,
yeah,
and they shut down the bank and don't let you withdraw your money from it, you'll find out real quick you don't actually hold that money. Someone else holds that, and if they prevent you from getting into it, you don't own it.
Hell,
that's
you can
what
go
has
to
happened.
Just over the past few years, you can go to a bank and ask them to give you $10,000 of cash, and they're going to get almost a scared look in their face. They're like,
yeah.
what do you need this for? I mean, the banks have
yep.
gotten to where they do not even like to hand you back cash. Your money is
right.
not there. It's on a
right.
ledger that says you have it there, but if everybody went to go get their money back, it ain't there.
Exactly the same thing with FTX, or any exchange for that matter, on crypto, but certainly with FTX. people had their money on basically a ledger with FTX, saying that their money was there. And then when times got hard and people started seeing some of these things coming out about FTX, everybody went all of a sudden to try to take all their money out.
Yeah.
FTX, just like the banks do, banks, when you hold your money with a bank, they then take your money and they invest that so they can make money.
Right.
Same thing's happening with FTX. FTX is taking, they have all these, all this crypto that's on a ledger somewhere saying you own it, but none of it's actually there because they've all sent it out somewhere to invest or to put in, to put in the money. When the market dropped,
yes,
all of a sudden people are wanting their money out, and FTX doesn't have the money. One, because they've lost your money because they invested into some of these cryptos too that have lost money. So they have not only invested your money and don't actually have it, your money, but now they have lost your money because they made bad bets too, or it may have all been orchestrated. They may have done all this intentionally.
I think it sounds like a bunch of all of it. I've played clips of the CEO of Alameda Research, which was just like this, like 28 year old girl that was like, she was like, and I lost like a lot of money.
That's right.
It's horrible.
I mean, so they had, one, they didn't actually have your money. It was all on ledger. Two, what they had taken from you, they were then investing and had lost a lot of it. So then when people all of a sudden ran in and said, hey, I want my money, they don't have it.
Yeah.
And the first few that took their money out may have gotten it, and otherwise they just collapsed. It just collapsed.
So this thing went from zero to the second. It was the second biggest exchange behind Binance. Is
right,
that correct?
That's right.
So it went from zero to the second biggest exchange in 2 years. And it went from the second biggest exchange down to complete bust zero, where people may not get any of their money back
in
3 days.
Yes.
So it was like Saturday, wasn't it, or Friday, that people started this bank run on them. And by Monday morning, we got the announcement, this thing's shut down.
Right. And so it's hit the entire market.
Yeah.
Not just any funds that were directly, or cryptocurrency that were directly owned or created by FTX. But Solana, and I've talked about Solana on the air, that was basically one of the top at least five cryptos in the world. Everybody knows about Bitcoin. Bitcoin's number one. Ethereum's kind of number two. Everybody knows at least Bitcoin, but a lot of people know about Ethereum. Solana was one of those top ones too. FTX held over $1 billion worth of Solana coins. And so when they went bankrupt, everybody all of a sudden started looking at their portfolio of what they owned in investments and saw that, well, they've got $1 billion worth of Solana. So then everybody realized that there's $1 billion worth of Solana that's about to hit the market. And so, supply and demand.
Yeah.
All of a sudden we've got a higher supply of, coins out there available. So they started dumping them. So it has cut Solana in half. And, I've talked about Solana on the air. Solana was one of my biggest holdings. And I have completely rid myself of Solana. I still think that it's, the blockchain technology of Solana is still, I think, one of the best ones out there. I think the technology behind what they're trying to do with Solana is the best. It's not only a currency. It actually has a blockchain technology, which is, nobody knows what that means. It's basically like the internet. I mean, it's like a new form of the internet is what they're building through some of these blockchains. And so Solana is basically a new form of the internet that is faster than internet. It's a faster money exchange. When you go to buy something, you swipe that credit card, and you can't just sit around and wait for the transaction to happen. It has to be fast. Credit cards, Visa, MasterCard, they all happen quickly. Bitcoin, while Bitcoin was the first adopted, it's the most widely used crypto, and so I think it will always have its place in crypto. It's probably the number one crypto, but it's slow. You can't have a Bitcoin credit card that's not through some kind of exchange or some kind of other holding. You can't have a Bitcoin credit card and swipe that credit card and the transaction happen basically immediately of how you need it to. It may take 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, you can't go to pay for something at the store and, take 10 minutes for your transaction to go through. So because Bitcoin is slow, these other cryptos have come up and become faster. And so Solana is like 50,000 times quicker than Bitcoin is. So it's basically immediate transaction like a credit card is. So I think Solana is still one of the greatest current technologies we have in crypto. But I don't know that it can survive this. We're already in a recession market for anything, stock market, yeah. Cryptos. They're all basically following the same trend. But when you have, you know, a currency or a, you know, cryptocurrency like Solana that's already at, you know, it was already 75% down from its all-time high, and now you have another hit like that that's going to, you know, crumble it, it's tough to come back from that.
Yeah, there's a lot of people are going to be scared. I'm actually watching the ticker right now. Bitcoin, what was its high, 70,000 last year?
66.
66,000. Yeah. It's now trading at 16,000. I may, if I keep this up, we may see a breakthrough 16,000. It's $16,043. Well, let's take a break and come back. I wanted to play this one clip about Sam Bankman-Fried because one of the things was that makes it feel like it was kind of an orchestrated whole deal is the way he was lauded as this real hero of crypto and a hero to humanity. I mean, this guy was just, he was the golden child. They didn't even do this with Bernie Madoff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but this guy was put out there as this great force for humanity and with all of the notoriety he got and all the assets he collected that he is now blown up. So it's kind of interesting in hindsight to listen to some of the interviews done with Sam Bankman-Fried. So we'll get to that when we come back. We're talking to Stephen Utroska here on the Mike Madison Show and the Mac Hike of Flowood Studios.
In his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain.
He was looking for the All right, we're back. We're talking about cryptocurrencies. I wanted to play this clip from Sam Bankman-Fried. In hindsight, certainly almost a little bit of comedy here. This was a guy from Dubai, you know, one of the big crypto enthusiastic guys came over and they did an interview, I flew all the way from Dubai over to the Bahamas to interview this golden child, crypto billionaire, savior of the planet.
Is not a traditional billionaire because he believes in the concept of earn to give, which means his goal as a human is to make as much money as possible just to give it away. Earn to give. And that's exactly what he's doing.
So let's say that you have $100 and you want to figure out what you can do with it to help the world. Earning to give is thinking about which causes, which charities save the most lives per dollar. This $100 can go as far as it possibly can to help.
Now, of course, he's about to give his laundry list of the things he's going to do to save humanity. Yeah. You can imagine what the causes are. It's amazing. This is a video. If anybody wants to look at it, it's on YouTube called Earning to Give, Story of the Most Generous Billionaire, Sam Bankman. He is your typical Democrat, isn't he?
Yeah.
Take a bunch of money from other people, give it away, and get your own pat on the back.
Well, at least he was saying he wanted to earn it. Yeah, he didn't want to steal
well, it,
although
it turns out he didn't actually want to do that. But looking at this kid, he's wearing a T-shirt where the neck is stretched out. He's got a backpack on. His hair is crazy. He's overweight. He's out of shape. He is entirely unimpressive. When I've heard his name mentioned as this mover and shaker in crypto, I just put up this kind of avatar in my brain of this guy, almost like Michael Saylor, I guess, who I find very slimy. I'll ask you about him later. But I just figured that he literally looks like a special needs kid with this backpack on and this stretched out T-shirt.
Yeah, but you know, I think people have almost come to expect that out of some of these tech guys.
Yeah, yeah. It's.
I mean, you look at, you know.
Nerds are running the world. So yeah. I agree. It's just his speaking style. I'm going to let this clip keep playing. We'll tell about the way he was going to save the planet with all his depositors' cash.
Yeah.
The world.
Last year, this 29-year-old guy donated $50 million. Next year, he's planning to donate $500 million a year.
Now, again, the guy was rumored to be worth $16 billion. So, you know, for somebody
What year was this? When was this published?
I mean, it has to be in the last 2 years. Let me see if I see it. I don't see.
So it was probably
9 months ago.
Oh yeah. So I mean, crypto was starting to come down 9 months ago, but we haven't hit really the peak of it before it dropped significantly. So you know, this guy's living it. You know, he's living it up because he took all his depositors' money and he put it into crypto and made a bunch of money. But then it hasn't started turning yet. It hasn't started dropping yet. So he's feeling good about himself. And then 9 months later, after the crypto market hit the bottom and he's lost everybody's money, gave away half of your money and then lost everybody else's money.
Yeah.
You know, now we've come to find out he's a crook and he took millions and millions of U.S. taxpayer dollars, and they were using his exchange to launder money out of Ukraine to then give to Democrat candidates and all kind of stuff. So, yeah, this.
Well, it always amazes me, too, on some of these left-wing people. I don't care if it's Bernie Sanders or this guy. It's always funny to me where they talk about all of this giving they're going to do. $1 billion is a lot of money. You hand you or me $1 billion, we never have to worry about a thing in our lives for generations outside of the total collapse of the U.S. dollar. But you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
It's so funny. So this guy has $16 billion. He gave away $50 million. That's like me giving out $100. You know, if you have $16 billion, you could give away $15,900,000,000 and leave yourself with $100 million. You live like a king for the rest of your life, and as do your progeny. Why are they so, you know, I mean, you could, if you can do so much with $100, what could you do with $15 billion? Why do you save 99.9% of your money, give away 0.1%? If all of this giving is just so dramatic to humanity, why do you need $16 billion in the bank?
Yeah, well, these same people are also advocating for increasing taxes so that they can steal money from everybody.
Right.
You know? I mean, so it's not just that he's, you know, expounding on how great he is because he gave away, you know, 1% of his income or of his net worth, but he's also at the same time asking that the government increase taxes on people and take away 1% of their net worth.
Right. Oh, sure.
And if your net worth is if your net worth is only $100 and they take a dollar out of you, that hurts.
Yes, absolutely. Let me finish this up.
And next decade, he will probably give away more than $10 billion.
Not anymore, he won't.
The amount of good that you can do for the future of the world is really large, and it's way more than you can do to actually make yourself happy with any.
Yet he retained $15,950,000,000.
At that moment.
Yeah, so he kept all of this, but he just said it's not going to make him happy, so why didn't he give away 95% of all of his money? Why just 1%? You know, it wasn't for happiness. It goes on because they're going to talk about his lifestyle. This was another part of his legend.
Anything like that amount of money.
And he is funding everything you can think of. Global warming.
It's one of the biggest problems that we have to tackle together as a world.
COVID-19 preparedness.
Ugh. We have to be ready for the next pandemic.
Neglected tropical diseases.
More than 1 billion people suffer from them. We have to eliminate these diseases.
And of course, animal welfare.
Animals deserve to live just like we do. It's also why I'm vegan.
It's also why you're mentally deranged.
So they're not only trying to push more Medicaid expansion for humans, but now they're going to have Medicaid expansion for animals too, right? Is that what?
Hey, look, there's very few probably people who love animals as much as I do, and just but boy, they sure are tasty.
Sam doesn't need the money to buy a Lamborghini buy a Rolex or to impress his friends. In fact, his car is a Toyota Corolla.
Hold on. Where's your car?
It's that one there.
That's like what, a Toyota?
It's a Corolla.
Why don't you buy a Lamborghini, man?
I didn't have any particular need for one.
He wants to get rich in order to impact the world and change it.
Try to think about what are the most important problems facing the world today, and what can you do to help make those as much better as possible.
In the next few decades, Sam may become a trillionaire. He is an example that age is just a number, and that making money is not a bad thing as long as you use that money to help the world.
There you go.
So the Democrats, you know, they absolutely hate the one percenters. Supposedly. Unless you're a one percenter, you're saying to this, you know, it's funny talking about the dogs. Have you ever seen Elwood's organic dog meat Facebook page? They may have a Twitter too, but so there's this parody Facebook page called Elwood's Organic Dog Meat, and it's actually run by vegans who are like PETA, you know, fanatics or whatever. But it's so funny to follow. So if you're on Facebook, follow Elwood's Organic Dog Meat. And it's, you know, it's a parody of a company that is they raise dogs for dog meat. and they're trying to show its hypocrisy about, you know, any kind of animals. But it's so funny. And they actual people fall for it, thinking that it's real.
Oh yeah,
and so you get these liberals on there who are, you know, just out of their mind, just so outraged doing it, and they do post all the time saying, "Oh, you know, we're having another do-it-yourself, learning adventure here at Elwood's. You know, bring your pets by, and we'll show you how to butcher them and all that." It's so funny.
Oh
so,
gosh,
sideline there, but Elwood's organic dog meat. It really is hilarious. You've got to look it up and follow it.
Yeah, so, well, that's our hero right there. You know, this is the guy, and it does feel like, oh, Bitcoin just took out 16,000. 15,920.
Ooh.
Yeah, down 2% today. This is going to be a long story. So when we come back, this is part of the reason we want to do this now. This feels, like you said, like it was set up to fail,
yep,
to spur the calls for a caution to the American people, to the citizens of the world. You just can't trust these people. Crypto is just too dangerous. Number one, we're going to have to regulate it. And what I suspect is they're going to need to come in and replace it. What they'll say is, there's so many great things about crypto and the blockchain, but it can't be trusted to just regular people,
yep,
and to businesses. Well, they will give the business to businesses, but only their assign, you know, it'll only be through, right, Goldman Sachs that you can do these things. So it's a perfect setup. So when we come back, I'm going to play some clips from these global meetings about what they're already talking about use for the blockchain. And it feels to me like it's going to shift the power away from decentralization right back into centralization.
Yep.
We'll talk about that when we come back. Stick around.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, here in the MacLike Fluid Studios. We're talking about crypto. This is a very important story. It's amazing. 2 hours, you feel like you can really flesh it out. I can tell we're going to almost run out of time.
Yeah.
A week ago, it was announced that the, I think it's JP Morgan, HSBC, the New York Fed, there's 12 banks, along with the Federal Reserve and maybe another central bank, is doing a testing of central bank digital currencies right now.
Yeah.
I think it's awfully convenient that this FTX, kind of the private market solution, suddenly blows up. Everybody loses their money at the same time they're launching this test. It's 12 weeks. By the beginning of next year, they'll come back and tell us how great, essentially, central bank digital currencies work. So I've got a couple of things. This was actually on CNBC. This is the new CEO of Visa. And here's what he's saying, kind of about this technology and how they're going to utilize it.
One good thing that comes out of this FTX disaster for their investors and their employees is that we see an acceleration towards regulation.
What? Yeah, yep, there it is, there it right is. There. That, and so Visa is a competitor. I mean, you know, Visa doesn't get a chunk out of any Bitcoin transactions. Suddenly, now, one of the great things that came out of this FTX disaster,
yeah,
is this call for increased regulation.
And leaning into good stablecoin regulation, because I think that that is what's necessary to build back confidence for people. And we'll see over time. We are setting up for the reality of crypto potentially having a role in payments and money movement. You know, we don't pick winners and losers. We ultimately let the consumer and the experience decide. But we're creating on and off ramps for crypto players, putting Visa cards in wallets, being able to convert the stable coin to a fiat currency and be able to use their Visa card to shop anywhere they want to shop. We're even working on being able to settle with a merchant at the end of the day who wants to get settled in a stable coin versus settled in
right,
currency. So we'll see what happens over time. But I hope this terrible event forces a more acceleration in regulation.
But Ryan, to the extent this is going to evolve under your leadership in a significant way, when it comes to stablecoins, for example, if Visa is offering it as an option, are we assuming, should the customer assume you've done the due diligence to make sure, for example, that everything in reserve is what they say it is?
Yeah, first of all, regulation's key. I think we can all agree on that. Hopefully it accelerates. We want to be involved in any way that people want to pay and be paid. And to the extent that stablecoins are a great way to do that in a well-regulated environment and, you know, two businesses want to engage in cross-border payments using stablecoins, yeah, we want to be involved in that and we want to help. And we only get involved in things where our brand is going to ensure that people ensure that it's safe, it's secure, and it's also easy.
And they also get to generate a fee.
Yeah.
I mean, so everything he's talking about is, well, now we're going to direct this into the Visa world, where currently you and I could exchange a Bitcoin for some product. They don't get a cut of that at all.
Yeah.
But they want their 3.5% out of everything. So if they attach Visa to a crypto wallet or whatever they're talking about doing now, they start collecting these fees.
That's right. Yeah, look, anytime somebody says, you know, they want something regulated, but then he goes into talking about, oh, but we believe in free markets, you know, this and that. Yeah. Look, first off, if he wants it regulated, he wants it regulated for protectionism. He wants to protect his own brand, not saying through consumer choices. He wants the government to come in and protect any competitors from coming in, like crypto is now. Free open market crypto is a competitor to him now.
Right.
He wants protections against that to help protect him against competition.
Right. And the government regulators, you know, they are all beholden. They're bought out by these big corporations. Yeah. So the regulation will tilt things to where, you've got to use – Visa's got to be attached to this, because Visa's going to vet these things for you. You're not going to lose your money if Visa signs off on it, but suddenly now you're paying the 3.5% transaction fee every time, and every single one of your transactions is completely traced.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Republicans are historically the ones who love to say, we don't pick winners and losers. But, you know, Democrats are saying that now, too, because it sounds great. Like, the American people, that polls well. When you look at communications, it polls well to say, well, we don't want to pick winners and losers. But even here in Mississippi, we just sent $250 million to a huge out-of-state corporation who's going to come in and crush all the small business competitors.
Yeah.
But our Republicans here in Mississippi don't want they're on the same page as that guy. We don't want to pick winners or losers, but we're going to make sure we put in regulations who are going to crush the small guys and only prop up and protect the big guys like Visa.
Yeah, the regulations they're about to roll out are going to be so onerous and so expensive for anybody except a Visa or a Goldman Sachs or a Fed, anything like that. It's going to completely stifle any competition.
Yep.
I mean, you know, I really wish we had more time, but I want to play these clips too. This is this was the G20 meeting, and I actually am not going to fast forward this. There's some intro music here. I just want to hear how pompous these people are at the G20. Listen to the ceremony that they are undergoing. It sounds like the Oscars. They're so self-important. But this is Queen Maxima. She is the Queen of the Netherlands, doing one of the keynote addresses to the G20 summit. That feels just so regal, so important. I mean, just listen to this production.
This your intro music.
Yeah, this is. I feel like I should just come out with that little twisty hand wave.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. It's the Queen Maxima coming to speak to the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to join with you virtually and to support Indonesia's B20 presidency. I thank you for this opportunity to put financial inclusion at the heart of our discussions. These are difficult times for people everywhere, and we're all seeking new ways to tackle the challenges before us, from COVID to conflict to inflation to climate change.
All the things they manufacture.
Every single one of these at the hands of the elites. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Every single bit of it. I mean, climate change is actually natural. they can't control it either way. But anyway, yeah, it's so funny.
But the hype is manufactured.
Yes, the hype is manufactured by them. The fear is manufactured by them. But yeah, they just love us all.
Inclusive finance offers new opportunities to build resilience, weather shocks, and invest in a more prosperous future.
So they just want happiness and prosperity for everybody. So she's going to tell you a little bit. So this is how they're bringing out the central bank digital currencies. Inclusion, equity are the buzzwords around this. And so she's going to go on here.
In my work as the UN Secretary General's Special Advocate, I have seen the remarkable difference that inclusive digital infrastructure in concert with digital financial services make for people and small businesses. We also need continued commitment to put in place a digital financial infrastructure that is inclusive, safe, and equitable.
There it is.
Greater connectivity and digital IDs.
It's so funny when you understand what's going on here. You know, most people would listen to this and they just feel like it's this, because there's a lot of unbanked people. But if you juxtapose this with the guy from Visa, you realize that, no, they just want their beak in this thing.
Yeah.
They want their beaks in there to generate their fees and to be able to track and trace every single one of these transactions, to herd it back into the system. And they call it inclusivity and equity and sustainable, whatever they call it. It is all about them getting their beaks into all these transactions. And this has always been my hesitation around crypto. I'm going to let her finish.
Allow access to financial services for millions previously left behind. Fair competition.
These are all people that they weren't able to generate fees off of before. Now they'll be able to get them their stuff so they can get fees off them,
and
too.
And again, fair competition. We just want a level playing field.
They love you.
And interoperable payment systems help markets work better for even the smaller scale customers. India offers a good example with the India Stack, which combines ID cards, a payment interface, and account aggregators in one easily accessible platform.
Tracked and traced ID cards, digital footprints.
Yeah, this is the scary monster that a lot of Republicans have been talking about in a digital currency. This is it.
Yes.
Crypto, decentralized cryptocurrency is not it, and it gets confused all the time. People don't understand it. So I understand why people are scared about cryptos that they don't understand. This is it. This is what you should be scared about.
I'm telling you. Since the day you and I have talked on this air and the day I've looked at crypto, this has been my fear, that it's going to be the bait and switch, that they will come in and take it, and they will harness what could be a beautiful power of a decentralized currency and co-opt it, crush independent competitors, and get everybody into this beast system. And I will say one other thing, too. She's talking about integrating, I don't know if she just said it there or not, integrating payments with social sites and stuff like that. That's what Elon Musk is doing with Twitter. He is moving to make Twitter a payment platform. That's his big idea with Twitter. I've been kind of cautioning people to raise Elon up on their shoulders as a savior of freedom, speech, and the right.
Yeah.
He's about to roll this thing out, too. Let's just get a little bit longer since we're running out of time.
Public-private collaborations.
There it is, the private.
Yeah.
Public-private. That's the government teaming up with the giant banks and the people who want to make sure they get their beaks wet in this thing.
Yeah.
A key for innovation and scale. Private-private partnerships that provides services across entire value chains is also crucial, especially for SMEs. Suddenly, these SMEs leap forward and connect to larger markets beyond the brick-and-mortar presence. Critical here is the transparency in the collection, sharing, and usage of customers' and SMEs' data.
Yeah, and it's about data as well. Yep. Well, she goes on, but you can get the vibe. This was the G20. This is on the heels of their testing the central bank digital currency. I just smell a huge rat here.
Yep.
I feel like we are being just herded into this funnel towards this electronic. And I have another one, too, but I'm actually going to use it for tomorrow's Tech Tuesday. They are talking seriously, I think, at the G20. The WHO is rolling out the vaccine passports, the health passport. They have to be ready for the next pandemic.
Yep.
And that will be tied to your digital wallet. You can rest assured.
And your social credit score and everything else.
Yes.
Yep. No, I'm with you. And again, I think they understand digital currency is the way of the future. And crypto has made that into a decentralized platform so that, again, you can take all of your assets, all of your money with just the knowledge of your key and get to somewhere with the internet to be able to access it. Gold and silver are great, but look, if they shut down the borders, you can't carry a bunch of gold and silver with you across the border through checkpoints where you can walk through with the knowledge of your keys with a decentralized. So I think they're trying to compete with that. They're trying to make FTX is making crypto the bad guy.
Right.
We've got to regulate it. We've got to do it. We can't do this. Don't do it on the black market. Don't do it behind closed doors. Get into ours. We can control it. I think eventually the black market cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin that are decentralized, I think because of all this will make that even more important.
Oh, I believe you're correct on that. My only thing is that I think that the vast majority of people will buy into what she is selling, not what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think that the vast majority of people, I think they're going to make life so hard on this planet through inflation, through wars, through whatever it is. They're going to make people really desperate. I've just started the show by saying 50 years of wearing away at people's incomes. Yeah. When they make your life so desperate, you'll accept anything.
Yeah.
And they're making lives more and more through inflation and money printing and what they've been doing. We're not far away. We saw a lot of people stay home for $1,200.
Yep.
They gave up their businesses. They wouldn't go to church. They wouldn't leave their homes. And they wouldn't go see Nana for $1,200, $600.
And everybody just accepted it.
Can you even imagine if you really are in some kind of a food crisis or there's mass layoffs in a deep, dark recession where people are struggling to survive and they say, well, All you got to do is get your shots and get your Fed wallet. We'll fill it up with some cash. You'll start eating again.
Yep.
That's going to be very powerful. Yep. Very powerful. All right, got to take a break. We'll be right back. All right, only a couple minutes left in the hour, so it's so funny. I mean, we got 2 hours here. You can still just leave a ton on the table with this crypto stuff.
I know. If we watch the ratings, like, you know, your ratings for the day have dropped off significantly as we talked about crypto, because it's just,
it's hard.
It's hard. Most people don't want to listen to it. Just like listen to the Fed. Nobody wants to listen to you talk about how bad the Fed is because they, you know, either don't understand it or don't care. I'm hoping people listen today because FTX was not only in the crypto, but there is more behind FTX with them funneling money through Ukraine back to the Democrat elections here. We didn't even talk about that, but that's what they've been doing. They were using FTX to do that.
Funding the research to crush ivermectin, for the love of God.
I mean,
the
Democrats have been using FTX to come out against Republicans and true conservatives for the last 2 years. And it was all, they're going to call us, you know, conspiracy theorists, but I think it was all set up. I think from the very beginning,
man, it feels like
FTX was a plant.
Yep. Just get this guy out there, turn him into a hero of everybody, give him a ton of attention, slap him on a stadium, and watch the lemmings throw money at him.
Yeah.
Or he will just take it just like his own bucket and just dish it out like feed at a chicken farm to whoever he wants to have the money. It's quite amazing. But this digital currency, I mean, you're right. It's not great for ratings. It's so important. It is going to be so important. You want to lose your freedoms? They can't lock you in your house for forever. But if they just cut you off financially where you cannot buy and sell, holy cow, that's going to be bad. It's going to be hard to resist.
Yep.
And they won't have to fire a shot. All right. That's Stephen Yastrzemski. Stephen, appreciate you joining me today.
Always
we'll have
pleasure.
You back again. All right. For everybody else, I will see everybody tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.